Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, November 13th. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets. Today we welcome back veterinarian Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital. And if you have a question about your dog or your cat, give us a call right now. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. If you feel shy, you can email us. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. voxpop@wamc.org. Only a paragraph or two, please. Sometimes there are pictures and attachments and 9 paragraphs. Keep it simple if you're going to email voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, and your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today, and here to take your calls is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of the Del Mar Animal Hospital. Dr. O'Loughlin is a graduate of Cornell University and joined the Animal Hospital in Del Mar, or the Del Mar Animal Hospital, if you will, in 1998. If you have a question about your dog or cat's health, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You may also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. The email thing, it's tricky on this show. You have to be explicit enough to get us the information we need for the doc, but I don't want it to go on and on and on. So choose your words carefully on the old emails and keep them brief if possible. voxpop@wamc.org, or you can call us 800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, how are you?
I'm excellent, Ray. How are you?
Nice to have you back on the show. We're going to start with a very exciting topic. It's heartworm. Why?
So I have for years been telling my clients that, up here in New York, in upstate New York, heartworm is not a huge problem, you know, like it is in the southern states.
This is a dog thing?
Yes.
Okay.
It's mostly a dog thing. Cats can technically get infected with heartworm, but it's a much more minor problem.
Okay.
But in the south, it's a very big problem. In the north, you know, we see isolated cases here and there. But I've always told my clients, but now the problem is it's gotten into the foxes and coyotes.
Oh.
Someone told me that years ago, and I don't remember who. Well, recently, I actually had a pair of foxes in my office who were being transferred from a rehabilitator to a zoo, and the zoo wanted them spayed and neutered and blood work and the whole thing.
Yeah.
They both tested positive for heartworm.
Yikes.
So it really is true. It's in the foxes and coyotes, and all it takes is a mosquito. So this is a mosquito spread disease. So a mosquito goes into the woods, bites a fox or a coyote carrying heartworm, comes into your backyard, bites your dog. If they're not on preventative, they can get heartworm.
Wow. And so what are the symptoms of heartworm in a dog?
Well, that's the biggest problem with heartworm. It doesn't show any symptoms until they are in the advanced stages.
Yeah.
At which point, treatment is very difficult without killing the dog.
Right.
So that's why 99% of the vets, probably more, heartworm test every year.
Yeah.
Because you want to find it if something skip through. If either people are not giving preventatives, or if, you know, you don't know, you give your monthly preventative and the dog goes out in the backyard 5 minutes later and throws up, you know, then they've missed a month and you don't know it. So it's better to find it early. It is treatable. However, the treatment is a 3 to 4 month long procedure, of which at least 2 to 3 of those months involves absolutely no exercise for the dog.
Wow.
Literally sitting in a crate.
Why is that?
Because as the heartworms die, they can become little blood clots and kill the dog. So you can't have the dog running around getting their heart rate up. And
but I mean, you theoretically then, even if the dog is completely sedentary, there is that chance that these heartworms can become clots and
they
kill
can.
The dog anyway?
They can. Yep. We actually treated a dog years ago that didn't survive the treatment.
Yikes.
Yeah.
By the way, let's just go back a minute. And we're joined by Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital. It's Pets and Vets, 800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org. You treated foxes. Is this common over there?
No. First time I've ever done it.
Really?
Yeah. They were two non-releasable foxes.
Right.
One was the female had been, I guess, found as a as a kit and hand raised.
Nah.
So she'd never been in the wild. And the male had been caught in a leg hold trap and had to have his leg amputated.
Aye.
So he was a three-legged fox. So they couldn't be released. And so they were transferring him to a new home. They were going to go live in a zoo down in Westchester County. And the zoo, before they got him, wanted them neutered and spayed and, you know, make sure they were healthy and had all their blood work done.
And so when you found the heartworm, is it the same course of treatment as it would be for a dog?
I'm assuming, but they're already down at the zoo, so it's not my problem.
Okay. So it's a zoo for three-legged foxes with heartworm.
I guess.
It's very specialized. All right. We had an email here, and then we will go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Pets and Vets Today with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. This email from Lisa. About once or twice a month, our five-year-old mixed-breed dog has incontinence. She can be sleeping, and when she gets up, there's a puddle. Even when she's outside, able to urinate as needed. As a rescue puppy, she had parvo. Very healthy now. What's parvo?
Parvo, this is probably not related at all to the parvo.
Okay.
Parvo is an intestinal virus that tends to, mostly puppies because it's usually unvaccinated.
Yeah.
And it was a killer for years. We're better at treating them now, but yeah, puppies can certainly still die of parvo.
Hmm.
This is most likely hormonal incontinence seen in female dogs, where the lack of estrogen from having been spayed leads to a weakening of the urethral sphincter, or the muscle that keeps the urine in. So when they are relaxed, it almost always happens when they're relaxed. They're sleeping, taking a nap on the couch, whatever.
Yeah.
They wake up and turn around and go, what? Where did that come from?
Yeah.
They have no idea, you know. You always want to rule out a bladder infection, so we always check a urine sample. But if that is clean, there are medications that can be given to resolve the incontinence. So it's very treatable.
All right. We're joined by Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin today. It's Pets and Vets. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's start out in Rhinebeck. And Maria, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Dr. O'Loughlin.
Hi.
So let me give you a little bit of background about my 6-year-old short hair pointer. He has pancreatitis, so he's on a low-fat diet. So my question is, when my husband takes him out for a nice 10-minute exercise, he's very active, he'll come in and drink water and then throw up afterwards. So why do you think that is?
I'm guessing it's still because he's a little amped up from the exercise. It's the same thing where you don't want to feed a dog right after they've been exercising a lot. He may just, you know, his stomach may still be a little like jumpy from running around. I would either just make sure he only gets, you know, little bits of water, or sometimes people even do ice cubes. As a way of slowing him down, you know, but I just wouldn't let him drink like half a bowl of water right after he's been out running around. So a lot of times, a lot of times if you x-ray dogs right after they've exercised, their stomach is full of air because they've been swallowing air while they're panting. And then I think you throw a bunch of liquid into that and they probably burp and, you know, water comes
so
back up or whatever.
Maria, you want to follow up?
No, thank you very much. Thanks for your time, guys.
Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Carrie O'Loughlin is here. Dr. O'Loughlin is with Del Mar Animal Hospital. 800-348-2551 is the number. Joel is in Colchester, Vermont. Go, Joel. It's all you.
Well, good afternoon, Ray and Doctor.
Hi.
I have a 15-year-old female spayed beagle, who has developed a cough. Now, another family member has taken her to the vets, and she has been put on pimobendin and Vetoryl. And I'm wondering, is this indicative of a heart disease? Because she has never coughed, but whenever she sleeps a lot, once she gets up, she'll cough a little bit. And I hear that and see that, maybe 6 or 8 times a day. And I'm wondering whether, you know, a light cough is indicative of a heart disease. I might just anecdotally say that I'm in my 80s, and one of my buddies who's in his 80s has been diagnosed with heart disease, and he coughs a lot. I'm sure you can't tell me about him, but what about my dog?
Yeah, so I will say if the veterinarian put the dog on pimobendin, that is a heart medication. So that alone tells me that they think there is something going on with the heart. Dogs with heart disease can cough for two reasons. One is fluid backing up into the lungs. And I literally was just at a vet conference last week where the cardiologist there was saying, really, most dogs with congestive heart failure tend to breathe more rapidly than cough.
Huh.
But sometimes dogs do still tend to cough with heart disease, mostly when they're first waking up. I think that like the fluid kind of gets into their airways a little bit and they have to clear the pipes. The other possibility with heart disease is the heart itself can enlarge and physically start pushing on the airways and stimulating the cough reflex. If that's the case, then heart medication does not help, and we often will end up putting the dogs on cough suppressants. And then last but not least, I do see an awful lot of older dogs who I think just get a little bit of a chronic bronchitis. There are these little hairs in the airways that help move the mucus up out of the airways and keep the airways clear. And I think they just don't work as well in the in the really older dogs. So I think they just tend to have trouble clearing their airways.
Okay, well, thank you. We're going to have further diagnostics, but if I could throw one more at you. Why does my 15-year-old beagle, when she goes out, like to eat dirt? I have to bring her back in. I want her to go out and play, but she'll start digging and eating dirt. And
delicious.
I'm not the only one who has commented on this. I've noticed a number of dog owners saying, why does my dog eat dirt?
Yeah, if it's something that just started as an older dog, I would think it could have a little dementia possibility in there. A younger dog, I think sometimes just like dogs like to eat grass, I think it's just a personality taste thing.
Okay. It's okay, though?
Yeah, I mean, most dogs aren't going to eat enough dirt to make themselves sick.
All right, Joel.
Okay, well, my dog and I are both coasting through our dotage together.
Good. Thank
you. Joel, thanks for the call. By the way, is 15 very old for a beagle?
15. Well, beagles can live a long time.
Yeah.
But,
how long?
It's 16.
Okay,
yeah.
So that beagle's near the end of the run.
Yes. The oldest dog I ever saw, though, is 21.
That's for any breed?
This was a little mixed breed beagle size, but a little dog from Japan. Came over at 18.
Very interesting. All right, let's take a break here. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us from Del Mar Animal Hospital. It's Pets and Vets Today. 800-348-2551 or VoxPop at WAMC.org. We'll be back. Ed Palermo and the orchestra, Gumbo Variations, the music of Frank Zappa. 800-348-2551. That's our number. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is here, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. All right, Dr. O'Loughlin, let's do a couple of emails, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Andrew in Rhinebeck. Says, Mini American Shepherd. I'm considering getting a Mini American Shepherd or an Aussie. What common genetic issues should we look out for? What's a mini American Shepherd?
I am completely clueless.
Really?
No idea.
So it's a new thing?
Assuming it's a newer breed.
Okay.
So unfortunately, I can't help him with that.
Okay.
Aussies, really the only... So Aussie, Australian Shepherd.
Okay.
Australian Shepherds are one of the herding breeds. The herding breeds are all potentially... prone to a genetic issue where they're missing a gene? I'm a little unclear, but they have some trouble metabolizing certain drugs.
Wow.
So there are certain drugs that we are cautious in using. They always say white feet don't treat because a lot of the herding dogs have white
feet. Really?
Yeah. So there are certain things that we have to be cautious with. But other than that, the mini American Shepherd.
Shepherd, yeah. Never heard about that.
No idea.
Okay. You know, if you were you own dogs, right, or do you not?
I'm dogless right now.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Well, in general, when you are looking at adopting a dog, do you go for a mix? I understand there are less are fewer issues with mixes.
Yeah. We have in our life, my husband and I's dog owning years, we've had two mixed breeds and two purebred Labradors because we love our black labs.
Yeah.
So we've had two black labs. Our first dog was half black lab and half coonhound.
Oh, cool. And well, then that's not a purebred, though, is it?
Nope. Her mom was a purebred lab who got mixed up with a coonhound.
I gotcha.
Yeah. And then our last dog was a southern rescue of unknown origin.
Yeah.
I came to the – I think he was a pit bull pointer mix of some sort.
But fairly good attitude and
everything?
Yeah,
yeah. Beautiful. He lived to be 15.
Okay. The number here is 800-348-2551. A couple more emails, and then we'll get back to the phones. Here's one. Interesting. From Joseph. Why does my hound beagle mix enjoy eating bees in the summer? He actively goes out and looks for them.
That's a new one. I haven't heard that. I mean, you certainly get enough dogs. I've had dogs and cats that have, you know, bitten on a bee and then their face swells up or their tongue swells or whatever. But they usually learn from that experience that that's not the smartest thing to do. But that's a new one. I've never heard
eating
of a dog who...
bees.
Well, you know...
Birds eat bees.
I have a friend of mine who does bee sting therapy, so where he actively stings.
What?
Yeah, it's a thing for help with pain and arthritis.
This is a doctor.
No, he's actually an exterminator.
Don't. All right, listen, this is a setup for a joke that I don't even want to know. All right, this is from Mario. I have a tuxedo cat. He's about 14 to 15 years old. 2 years ago, I removed a lump mass off his neck behind his ear. Cost me $1,200. Now this year, he has a little mass growing above his right eye. It's about a centimeter in diameter. I'm not sure if this is another mass or something else. If it is, are these age-related or their diet? Is there something I can make him eat to avoid these? What's your opinion, please? And thanks. And that's from Mario.
Well, unfortunately, not knowing what kind of lump the first one was that was removed.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of very benign skin lumps, you know, most of them related to wax glands or glands in the skin that they can very happily live with.
Right.
And then there are other lumps that are cancerous.
Yeah.
So generally, we want to get a sample out of these lumps. Stick a needle in it, get a sample, look under the microscope, figure out if it's something you need to worry about or not.
Do you generally...
And there's probably nothing in the diet that you can do to prevent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do dogs generally tolerate it pretty well when you stick them with a needle, or do you have to sedate them?
Oh, yeah. Most times, it's not a problem.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, a cat with one above an eye could be a little tricky.
Yeah.
But, you know, we could still, you know, usually scratch them on the head enough that they don't notice what we're doing.
All right. Let's go back to our phone lines here for now. We'll check the email bag in a bit. Steven is in Albany. Steven, you're on.
Oh, hello. I'm adopting a miniature dachshund, and it's my first time parenting a smaller breed. I've had a large red-bone coonhound and a Doberman in the past. It also coincides with winter that I am adopting this little guy. So my question is about nighttime inside temperature of the thermostat, because we want to crate train him, and then also housebreaking in the winter. So how long should I take him out in the cold? I imagine he's going to be itsy bitsy and not fit any of the doggy sweaters that I can find online. What's your opinion on that?
So, you know, as far as worrying about taking the little guy out to, you know, potty train, you're not going to be outside long enough for him to get that cold. You know, even if he's itty bitty and it's really cold out, a lot of times that kind of gets them to do their thing quicker because they want to get back in the warm house.
Okay.
I will say that is the one time, though, where I will sometimes, you know, say to people, it's okay if you want to, you know, do the pee pads in the house to start with.
Right.
But then then you have to house train them twice because you got to eventually house train them off the pee pads.
Yeah.
But if it's, you know, if it gets to be, you know, minus 15 outside and you don't want to take this little itty bitty guy out to pee, that's understandable.
Yeah, no.
And then as far as the thermostat in the house, they've got a fur coat. You know, they don't, you don't need to turn your heat up, you know, any higher than you're comfortable at. So I wouldn't worry about them.
Interesting.
Getting cold.
Well, we turn the thermostat down like into the 50s at night.
Right.
So I'll just throw a blanket in there and he'll be happy.
I think he'll be fine.
Okay.
I think he'll be fine.
All right, Stephen, thanks a lot for the call. Aren't the dachshunds the ones that people will put inane sweaters on and such?
They are one of the, yes, one of the, you know, any of your short-coated dogs that don't have a lot of hair. I mean, even our last dog I was talking about, the mix, he was pretty short-coated, and we had a coat for him.
You did?
For the winter. Yep. He liked it.
Darn.
He would lay in the sun in the heat. He was black, and he would lay out in the sun and get as hot as to the point where you couldn't touch him.
Yeah.
But he did not like the cold.
So interesting. All right, let's go to Eileen in Half Moon. Eileen, you're on with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin.
Hi, I have a 4-year-old short-haired indoor-only cat, and he often eats and vomits almost immediately afterwards.
Oh, splendid.
I put him on, he's been on dry food, and when he vomits, the food looks like it wasn't even chewed. So I switched him to wet food, and he still often vomits immediately after he eats.
Mm.
So this could be a number of things. How old did you say this cat is?
He's 4.
He's 4. And has he been doing this all along, or is this a newer behavior?
Yes. When we first got him, we had 2 cats, and he would eat so fast that he would migrate over to the other cat's dish and start eating her food. And I thought maybe this was just he was inhaling the food so fast.
Yeah.
He was vomiting. But we no longer have 2 cats, and he still does this. Okay. And I've tried putting the food in like a dish that is slotted so he has to like pick the food out. So it slows down his eating. And I have fed him much smaller portions, thinking that maybe he's just gorging himself, and so that's why he's vomiting. But it helped it some, but it still happens.
Yeah, My guess is there's something in the food that is not agreeing with him. So you know,
allergies or just
could
not
be, yes,
taste.
Could be allergy. So inflammatory bowel disease is basically the fancy term for dogs that are dogs and cats that are allergic to their food.
Okay.
So it's either you could start out with an easily digestible diet, and there are now some over-the-counter ones that are made by a lot of different food companies that are, you know, listed as easily digestible. Most of those are, a lot of them are chicken-based. Now, that's the number one allergen in cats.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't work,
then
the next step is to put him on a what we call a limited ingredient diet. And that is getting ingredients he's never had before in his life. So they make like rabbit and duck and things like that.
Oh, yeah. My cat loves rabbit, Eileen. Oh, yeah.
And you see how he does with that. I mean, certainly, you know, getting his blood work checked and making sure there's nothing else going on. Is he losing weight? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of other things that can be done as well. So.
All right.
Yeah, he's never lost weight. He's always been perfectly normal except for this one issue.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And vomiting is not normal in a cat. People think their cats like, oh, all cats throw up. No.
Okay.
No. So.
All right, there you are. Eileen, thanks a lot. By the way, Mimi in Salisbury, Connecticut writes, I had a Jack Russell that loved eating bumblebees.
Oh,
isn't that something? And you, a vet, you didn't even know.
Who knew?
Don't you get, I mean, isn't there poison in the stinger?
No, it just hurts.
Really, that is crazy talk. Boy, I'll tell you what, I've never owned a dog, but now I definitely don't want to own a dog. Lori in Newburgh. Lori, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a 16-and-a-half-year-old pit mix, mostly pit, probably a little Staffordshire and Bull Terrier. She's got a lot of problems, spinal issues. Her back legs give out sometimes, but she still plays and runs around. She has had pancreatitis attacks. She's got growths all over her, and most when we have tested them, they've been non-cancerous. But she's developed this cough that's like a honk and a wheeze, and often with panting. And we're trying to gauge, like, pain. You know, I've read that panting could be a sign of pain. And, you know, it's like week by week. She's you know, she eats a lot. She goes out and does her business. She likes to play with dogs. And I try not to take her out too much. Like, she walked a mile recently, and that was probably a little too much, but she really enjoyed it. So it's like we're at that stage where we have to decide, you know, how to keep her comfortable and what to do next. I'm not going to do x-rays for thousands of dollars. I'm not going to do surgery. So I think it's just a question of how do you gauge pain, and if there any other advice you have.
Right. So is she on any pain medication at this point?
Yes, she's on Galliprant, gabapentin. Oh, she also, a couple of years ago, started having seizures. She's on phenobarbital.
Okay. And did the gabapentin and the Galliprant help?
Well, she's been on those for a long time, very long time. And the vet doesn't want to give her any more because she feels like she has enough drugs
every day. Has your vet spoken to you at all about Librela? It's a monthly injection.
Librela. What is
it? Librela is a newer class of pain medication in dogs that blocks the nerve sensation. So their brain doesn't recognize it as pain. And for some dogs, So sometimes it's a matter of treating them and see how they respond.
Oh, yeah.
I did, and I'm racking my brain right now. Again, I was just at this conference last week, and I think it's Colorado State University. One of the vet schools has a pain score thing on their website, and I think it was Colorado State. So you could always just look up pain score index or, you know, dog canine pain score. And see if it comes up. But I think it was Colorado State, and it has a whole list of things to look for to determine what your dog's level of pain is. I haven't even had a chance to go on the website yet because this was literally just like 4 days ago I was at the conference.
Yeah.
So that's something you could check out to see if it looks like your dog's in pain.
All right, Lori, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go take one more before our next break. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, we'll go to Saratoga, and it's Mary's turn. Hello, Mary.
Hi. We have an 8-year-old Irish setter.
Okay.
And she has been having loose stools for a long time. We put her on the canned chicken and rice and put extra rice in it, and it helped for a while, but now nothing's helping, and it doesn't do any good. She's on Neutro dog food that's for sensitive stomachs, seniors. She keeps getting these little infections like in her feet or on her foot, front foot or back foot, and she licks and licks and licks. Don't know what to do to help her.
Yeah, so I was going to ask with the foot licking and the loose stools, again, I'm kind of back to what I was talking about with that cat that was just vomiting. So this is likely to be a food allergy. So you may want to try a non-chicken-based food and see if that makes a difference. You always want to, especially with dogs, because they seem to be overly sensitive to food change. You know, any change you do gradually. And ideally, a lot of the over-the-counter diets are not considered clean. So these limited ingredient diets that I spoke about, if the company doesn't clean their machines out really well, they can be contaminated
With allergens,
other,
you mean?
Well, with other ingredients, yeah. So if they made a chicken-based food and then made a duck-based food and they didn't clean the machines, you know, a lot of these diets have been tested and found to have other ingredients in them
than
what's on the label.
Though? Don't they have
Not for, I guess, for the over-the-counter diets.
Interesting.
So ideally, you would try your dog on a prescription diet first, because those are clean. And if she does well on that, then you could always try one of the over-the-counter diets.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm guessing with the foot licking and the soft stools that this is an ingredient issue.
Ingredients.
So
should I try fresh chicken, cooking fresh chicken?
No, because if she's already on a chicken diet and she's allergic to chicken, yeah.
Yeah.
It's only going to add to it. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you. We have to take a break here. Oh, go ahead, Mary. Very quickly.
Is there something else I can try with the rice to try to firm up her stool again? Because like I said, at first it took care of the problem for a very long time, and then
just last month. Yep. I mean, you could always try just a different protein. So like get some, you know, ground beef with all the fat soaked out of it, or even some pork or something like that, and try that with rice and see how she does.
All right, Mary, we have to go and take a break, but we'll be right back and take more calls and emails and whatnot. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Marquise, Hold It on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us today for the pets and the vets. And let's go do a couple of emails here before we go back to the phones. Jane writes in, I'm writing in regard to the question about the female dog who releases urine when sleeping. I have a 4-year-old blue heeler who has had that issue her whole life. Took a while, but we finally got it diagnosed as having been born with a hooded vulva. We've treated it successfully since diagnosis with Proin, though occasionally she'll still have relapses that last a week or two here and there. When that happens, I use UT supplements to get her back on track. Hope that helps. That's from Jane.
Yes. So the medication she's using, Proin, is...
Oh, it's Proin?
Proin.
Proin sounds more like a Jerry Lewis word. No, get the Proin.
Yeah, no, Proin is one of the medications that will treat the female urinary incontinence in dogs. So, but the hooded vulva is basically where the dog's vulva is sort of tucked under, and it tends to trap urine and things and makes them more prone to infections and things like that. So,
okay, let's move on. And Mike in Petersburg, I have a 15-year-old Chihuahua who now walks with her back arched and her tail between her legs. Her back legs don't seem to coordinate with her front legs. Does this indicate something in particular? And that's from Mike in Petersburg.
It sounds to me like the dog's having a back problem. So, uncoordinated back legs is often a sign that the nerve impulses aren't making it up to the brain properly, so they like don't know where their feet are.
So is that just, you can't fix that?
It can be potentially. You know, you'd have to probably get some imaging, some x-rays, or sometimes it takes a CT or an MRI, but or it could just be treating pain and seeing if the dog's got a painful back.
All right, this one's from Karen in Bern. I have a rescued, large, older orange tabby. He's been diagnosed with pancreatitis. We manage it fairly well with a diet and a good vitamin supplement. We do have flare-ups. Is it normal that this disease has flare-ups and times when they're doing fairly well? And that's from Karen in Bern, New York.
Short answer is yes.
Yeah. So, so it'll come and go.
I had a couple of cats that had recurrent bouts of pancreatitis. So, and you treat them when it happens, and a lot of times they come around. And but it does seem to be a somewhat recurrent problem in cats.
All right, a couple more emails, and then we'll jump back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Mary writes, this is very interesting. Subject heading cat ophthalmologist. My 15-year-old cat does not seem to see close up. Is there a test I can do to determine her sight? I love this question, because how can you tell? You can't say read the letters.
Yeah, no. I mean, a veterinarian can look in their eyes and see if there's an issue. But as far as determining, you know, far vision, near vision, no, no, okay. nothing that I'm aware of.
Okay, this is from Peggy, and then we'll go back to the phones. Peggy says, what can we do to prevent our 3-year-old Russian Blue from throwing up when she travels in the car? I got this. Don't put the cat in the car. That would be my first choice. What do you think, doctor?
So, A, don't feed them the day of the trip, or a very, very, very light breakfast.
Yeah.
Just so there's something in their tummy. And then you can use, you can try one of the over-the-counter antihistamines. So Dramamine, which is a human anti-nausea, you know, motion sickness, is basically just an antihistamine.
Really?
So things like Benadryl, cats, I tend to go more with Zyrtec or Claritin. And then if that doesn't work, there's a prescription medication that we have that works well for nausea.
Okay, so is it stress more than anything?
Yeah, I think sometimes it's motion sickness, sometimes it's stress, fear.
Well, since we're on over-the-counter meds, one more email. This one's from Andrew. Can dogs or cats take Motrin or Tylenol? Is there an equivalent over-the-counter for these animals to manage sore joints and pain?
You don't want to use Motrin is ibuprofen.
Okay.
So you don't want to use that in dogs or cats.
Why?
It's got a very, very narrow safety thing, and it can cause kidney problems.
So no Motrin.
Right. Tylenol will kill cats. So you do not.
Jeez.
One Tylenol will kill a cat. So you don't want to give Tylenol to your cat ever.
Wow.
Dogs actually can take Tylenol. You just, you know, again, have to get a proper dose.
What about aspirin?
From the vet. Aspirin tends to cause stomach ulcers.
Really?
Yep.
Like very quickly? A baby aspirin or something?
I mean, one dose of aspirin, probably not, but if they're on it any kind of regularly, you're going to give them an ulcer.
Okie dokie. Let's go back to our phones. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us from Del Mar Animal Hospital. Let's go to Newburgh. It's Catherine. Hello, Catherine.
Hello. How are you guys today?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
I'm fantastic. My mom just moved here recently from Arizona. Last 2 weeks, been here with me and my husband and our 2.5-year-old Siberian kind of 11-pound cat. And she has a 9-year-old Chihuahua Yorkie mix. And they kind of bump noses every now and again. But when she kind of slinks through the house, he chases her like crazy. So we're just wondering. I mean, she's got her little safe places to go to. But we're just wondering if there's a better way to make them cohabitate.
Well, in my mind, as much as you can, I would work on the dog chasing the cat behavior.
Uh-huh.
because the cat's not going to like the dog if every time the dog sees her, it chases her. So you may need to keep the dog on a leash a little while in the house and, you know, praise the dog when it is quiet when the cat's in the room and give it a, you know, reprimand when it wants to chase. My last dog was a bit of a prey-driven dog, and
really?
I had to go through this when we got some kittens. And he still occasionally chased them, but it wasn't, you know, every time he saw them. So it's really just a matter of training the dog. And like you said, making sure the cat has safe spaces to get to. And they usually will work things out. But if you can get that dog to not want to chase a cat every time he sees it, that would be the ideal thing.
Catherine.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. You know, in my experience, and I haven't had that many experiences where my cat interacted with dogs, but every time the dog ran away like a chicken.
Well, I mean, Mitchell's a big, tough cat.
Mitchell is a big, tough cat. And I had a seal point growing up, and nobody messed with the seal point. Yeah. The dogs ran scared. It was exciting. Let's go to Michelle in Averill Park. Michelle.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 16-year-old male cat who had blood in his urine, and he's being treated for what the vet thinks is probably a mass in his bladder. He didn't respond to antibiotics. He's otherwise very healthy, has a great appetite. He's on CBD and Meloxidil for inflammation. And I was just doing some research on it recently, because I guess in my mind I'm hoping that it's not cancer, that if it was a buildup of crystals in his bladder, he has not had a blockage. If there is something that he could take, I saw some homeopathic meds that said that it could break up the crystals, but I don't want to cause a blockage in him if that would do that. Are you familiar with that at all?
I'm afraid I'm not familiar with the medication. I mean, there are certainly diets, prescription diets you can get from your vet that are formulated mm-hmm. to dissolve crystals. And some crystals are dissolvable and some are not.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Did the cat have, did the vet see a mass? Did they do an ultrasound of the bladder?
They did one originally, and yes, she thought one was there.
Okay.
But they, it was like a mini ultrasound. It wasn't a real extensive one.
Gotcha.
And I have been avoiding that because I keep asking, to what end would that be if
right.
there's nothing we can do? And like I said, you'd never know in a million years there's anything wrong with him other than
yeah.
his frequency to go to the litter box.
Right, right.
And the blood.
Well, I mean, there is a medication that I have used somewhat to help cats with bladder tumors. And it's another mm-hmm. anti-inflammatory like the Meloxidil that he's on. And it's called mm-hmm. Piroxicam.
Okay.
And that will sometimes shrink bladder tumors.
Amazing.
And if nothing else, it is an anti-inflammatory. It's just a different one than the one he's on. So it would help his arthritis, but it could do double duty for you.
All right.
Yeah.
So you might want to ask your vet about that and if they've ever used
it. Okay. All right.
Well, thanks, Michelle. Appreciate the call. It's Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin today. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And let's see. Okay, we'll go to Beacon. Jim, it's you. Go.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a 16-year-old kitty mix. In the last few months, she's developed this very deep, almost, I want to say, like geese-like cough, and then tries to throw something up. And this will go on for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. She'll do it once, twice, 3 or 4 times. And she's also developed a lot of panting, which can last for half an hour. And she does have arthritis, and she is on pain medication for that. And I'm wondering if there's anything you can might be able to suggest that might be going on with this coughing.
Has she had a chest x-ray?
No.
That would be my first thing.
I see.
You know, a 16-year-old dog, they can get pneumonia. And unfortunately they can get tumors and they can get heart disease
right.
and
yeah.
things like that. So
right.
you want to rule all those bad things out. And then,
yeah.
you know, sometimes if everything looks good, I'll try a round of antibiotics in case it's some sort of bacterial bronchitis. And then if all
right.
else fails, then we go to the cough suppressants. But I would at least get a chest x-ray done. They don't, you know, they don't need to sedate them or anything for that. They just need to lie down on the table for a second.
Okay.
You know, most dogs are pretty pliable about getting that done.
All right, Jim. Good luck, man.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call. Joyce in Irving, Massachusetts writes, I have a 10-year-old cat that since his sister died in September has cried every night since and wants to go outside around 2 a.m. on the screen porch. He goes over to the side where his sister was laid to rest and cries for a good 5 minutes, then comes in. He's in good physical condition. What can I do to help him? And that's from Joyce in Irving, Massachusetts.
Definitely. I mean, you do see some animals that will mourn for their...
We know elephants do.
...fellow pets. And it sounds like this guy's one of those. I always just say, you know, lots of TLC, lots of attention, extra petting, you know, try and distract them as much as you can.
Yeah.
But they've got to work through it, unfortunately.
All right, let's grab a couple of more calls here at least before we go with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. We'll go to Campbell Hall. Victoria, you're on.
Hi, doctor. Can you hear me well?
I certainly can.
Great. I'm calling about my dog. He's a border terrier mix, and he's about 15 years old. He's been a really hardy dog since we adopted him, except for, you know, teeth cleaning and issues. But a few years ago, he started to develop this habit of licking all kinds of soft materials like carpeting, fabrics, sheets, blankets. I don't know if it's anxiety. I tried a thunder shirt on him, which did not seem to help at all. Some people have recommended CBD, but I haven't tried anything. And then once in a while, like maybe every 6 weeks, he'll cough up a really nasty hairball, which had me really concerned that, you know, this could cause a blockage. But I spoke to a vet, and he said, well, if he's coughing it up, that, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I just don't know if there's anything to do to stop him from that licking, or if maybe CBD oil would help, or I don't know where to go with it.
Yeah, I mean, my two thoughts, the first one you already had would be some sort of anxiety, and he's, mm-hmm. like, trying to soothe himself. And some people have found CBD to be quite helpful with that. You know, and then there are also a whole laundry list of medications your vet could prescribe for anxiety. The other thing I wonder is, could he have a little, like, acid reflux or something like that that he's trying to soothe? So you could try a round of some antacids.
Interesting.
And see if that makes a difference. And again, there are a bunch of different ones you could try. So, you know, you could always give your vet a call and see if they could give you a recommendation for what they like.
Okay, so something like a Pepto or a Tums type of thing?
Yeah, it's usually more either omeprazole, which is like Prilosec, or one of the, like, famotidine, which is Pepcid.
Which one would you like better, Doc?
Okay.
Pepcid works best short term. It gives you sort of quick relief, but it doesn't last very long.
Mm-hmm.
Where the omeprazole is more longer term, but it takes a few days to kick in.
Victoria, thanks for the call. This is very interesting to me because, I mean, we can't understand how dogs think, right? But if a dog has indigestion, why lick a carpet? Is a carpet like an Alka-Seltzer? I mean, what's the deal?
I don't know. Or, you know, they're just trying to get something to soothe their aching tummy.
So interesting. All right, we have time for one more here. Let's go to Chad in Poughkeepsie. Chad, go ahead.
Hey, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so similar to the woman who called in earlier about the dog, introducing the dog to the house that had the cat, and the dog chases the cat, we have a similar situation. We had a 5-year-old indoor cat, and we have recently taken in she's probably 1.5. She was a street cat, and we've had her for about 3 weeks now, and we did, like, the separate room, you know, door up in the middle, introduce them through the door thingy, and then she came out. And she won't leave him alone. She chases him around. She hisses at him.
Okay.
She kind of corners him into different spots of the house. What
do you think? Yep.
I would get some feel away.
Yeah.
Feel away. They come as diffusers or sprays. It's sort of the happy cat pheromone.
It doesn't affect people? Chad won't be extra happy if they put the diffuser out?
Okay. And then lastly, the other thing is... I just totally lost his name.
Chad?
No, there's a cat. There's a cat whisperer online.
Oh, really?
Oh,
come on.
He did a show, My Cat from Heck.
Okay. All right.
But anyway, he has a website. If you look up cat behavior, you might find his website. And he's got a bunch of good videos.
So you're on board with this cat whisperer cat?
Yeah.
Very interesting. Chad, we got to go. We're done here. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, this was fun.
Yeah.
I'm just still interested in the fact that you worked on foxes. This is amazing. We got a few running around our backyards that annoy me. All right. Well, thank you. We'll see you soon.
Okay.
Are you here before the end of the year?
No.
Then have a lovely holiday season.
All right.
We'll see you in 25.
Sounds good.
Support comes from Adirondack Council, supporting local agriculture and sustainable communities through the Essex Farm Institute, AdirondackCouncil.org for information. And Thomas Broccoli, financial advisor with RBC Wealth Management, providing comprehensive wealth and portfolio management, retirement planning, and personalized financial strategies for over 35 years. Tom Broccoli, rbc.com. Thanks again to Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Sorry if we didn't get to your question. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phone screened expertly by Andrea Leon. Andrea, thanks a lot. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, this is exciting, Adventures in Radio. The train guys are back to talk about model trains and the real thing and railroads of yesteryear, railroads of tomorrow, imaginary railroads. Really, just the password is railroad. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.